Today's WBFO brief was recorded at around 8:30 in the morning. This is WBFO News.
Former drug enforcement agent Joseph Bongiovanni could spend 20 years in prison following his conviction on charges related to a drug conspiracy. Federal prosecutors say Bongiovanni used his position to protect associates involved in illegal activity from investigation, arrest, and prosecution, going as far as providing the identities of informers and other, quote, law enforcement sensitive information about investigations. The crimes include one count of conspiracy to distribute a controlled substance, one count of a false statement to law enforcement, four counts of obstruction of justice, and one count of conspiracy to defraud the United States. A 15-year-old is being charged with a misdemeanor for allegedly using a TikTok post and making a school threat. After the FBI and New York State Police were notified of the threat, Buffalo police executed a search warrant at a Mariner Homes apartment. Beyond the arrest of the teenager, police say they also recovered an illegal weapon at the location and subsequently charged 33-year-old Yarlize Santana Garcia. And the subject of illegal guns is on the agenda this morning for Senator Kirsten Gillibrand when she appears at Buffalo Police Headquarters. The focus will be on the anti-gun trafficking statute, the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act. The senator says the statute is responsible for the prosecution in Buffalo of six gun traffickers and the seizure of 30 illegal guns. Gillibrand will appear with Police Commissioner Joseph Grimalia, Mayor Byron Brown, and Council President Chris Scanlon. A Buffalo startup is joining four other companies that will claim a $1 million investment as winners of the 10th annual 43 North competition. The local entity is Food Nerd, which is described as a food technology platform redefining the processing of shelf-stable foods. Beyond the $1 million investment, winners receive office space, mentorship, and other benefits. In return, 43 North claims a 5% equity stake in the companies. In its first decade, the competition has led to the investment of 69 companies, with over half of them remaining in Buffalo. The other winners are CoverRight of Brooklyn, Huron AI of Cambridge, Massachusetts, Rarebird of San Francisco, and Spiky AI of Brookline, Massachusetts. The organized labor movement continues to expand in the region. The direct service workers of the nonprofit organization Hispanics United of Buffalo have voted to join 1199 SEIU, United Healthcare Workers East, the largest healthcare workers union in the country, an organization that provides direct care and social services to at-risk communities throughout Western New York. Hispanic United of Buffalo has 31 direct service workers. And water infrastructure projects in the village of Hamburg and the Orleans County village of Holly will receive low-cost financing from New York State. The allocations are part of $665 million being distributed statewide by the Environmental Facilities Corporation. In Hamburg, a $5 million grant will pay for the installation of a new 1.25 million water gallon. Well, Buffalo's comptroller says some city departments are in violation of the city charter because they do not comply with internal audits. Comptroller Barbara Miller-Williams penned a letter to the Common Council stating that city departments, quote, frequently fail to respond to audit requirements. WBFO's Holly Kirkpatrick reports.
City departments are required to provide a written response to an internal audit in accordance with the city charter, and that response should detail plans regarding how to solve any issues the audit reveals. But according to Buffalo Comptroller Barbara Miller-Williams's letter, there is a recurring lack of responses.
So this is a kind of a long-standing, like, historical issue.
Speaking at the Buffalo Common Council's Finance Committee meeting Tuesday, City Auditor Sam Bruno said that departments are given 30 days to respond to a draft of the audit, but
sometimes the audit files are laughable because it'll be like a year and we have no response.
Though Miller-Williams did not specify the departments in question, WBFO has obtained two internal audit reports completed in the last year, both of which pertain to the Department of Public Works, Parks and Streets, and uncovered shortfalls when it comes to oversight of contracts and rent owed to the city. Neither audit received a response, according to the reports. Finance Committee Chair and Fillmore District Council Member Mitch Nowakowski requested a list of departments that have not been complying.
When we don't get a response, it's not only non-transparent, it's disrespectful, and it goes against our charter.
Department of Public Works Commissioner Nate Martin did not reply to WBFO's request for comment. Holly Kirkpatrick, WBFO News.
One of Canada's big banks has been hit with a record fine. TD Bank has agreed to pay U.S. regulators a whopping $3 billion to settle charges that have failed to monitor money laundering by drug cartels. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
The fine, the largest ever under the U.S. Bank Secrecy Act, came after TD Bank pleaded guilty in what's become a historic money laundering case. Among the charges, conspiracy to commit money laundering. Included in the fine is $1.3 billion to be paid to the U.S. Treasury's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network and $1.8 billion to the U.S. Justice Department. Attorney General Merrick Garland compared TD to a criminal organization.
At various times, high-level executives, including the person who became the bank's chief anti-money laundering officer, knew there were serious problems with the bank's anti-money laundering program. But the bank failed to correct them. TD Bank created an environment that allowed financial crime to flourish. By making its services convenient for criminals, it became one.
Legal documents say more than 90% of transactions between January of 2018 and April of 2024 went unmonitored, and that allowed three money laundering networks to transfer more than $670 million through TD accounts. The U.S. Treasury Department says the bank prioritized growth and profit over compliance with the law, enabling drug trafficking. There were hundreds of millions of dollars in transactions that were highly suspicious. Justice Department officials say TD Bank employees were given thousands of dollars in gift cards to process more than $470 million. The bank will now be subject to 4 years of scrutiny by financial regulators. Its money laundering compliance office is being forced to relocate to the U.S., and there will be a cap on its growth in the U.S. TD Bank CEO Bharat Masrani apologized and says he takes full responsibility and the bank will ramp up its anti-money laundering efforts. The bank's shares plummeted 6% on financial markets. For WBFO News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto on the Canadian Beat.
Sabres fall in their home opener. St. Bonaventure makes more headlines. Postseason baseball continues in New York. A major soccer match is coming to Buffalo, and the Bills continue to fight the injury bug. I'm Jack Cruiser. This is The Scoreboard for Friday, October 11th. Fans in Buffalo were in for a show last night. From the time they walked up to the party at Alumni Plaza outside of KeyBank Center till the final buzzer of the Sabres home opener. The show they saw, however, was a tragedy, one that ended with Buffalo falling 3-1 in unfortunate fashion. Special teams was the focus of the night, with the Sabres power play going scoreless in their first two games. Buffalo earned an early penalty and another, giving them a two-man advantage for over a minute, which resulted in just one shot easily stopped. The Sabres power play went 0-5 on the night, a clear sore spot to open the season, now 0-11 overall. That's not to say the blue and gold didn't create chances, they most certainly did, but it seemed as though the team played more fluidly at even strength and, frankly, shorthanded. The Sabres penalty killers stole the show every time they took to the ice. From their first opportunity, Ryan McLeod and company were outstanding, creating more chances with a man in the box than Buffalo did with an extra skater. In fact, McLeod earned a penalty shot on the Sabres' first PK of the game. It was in the second period when Alex Tuck capitalized on a Kings turnover and buried his own rebound while shorthanded to give the Sabres the 1-0 lead. LA opened the third with the game's tying goal just 13 seconds in, then a late controversial penalty and another gave the Kings a 5-on-3 power play with less than 2 minutes left, and in tragic fashion, the Kings scored to take the lead and again on an empty net to clinch the victory 3-1. Last season's Stanley Cup champions make their way to Buffalo tomorrow as the 0-3 Sabres host the Florida Panthers Saturday night. Puck drop is at 7 p.m. St. Bonaventure has announced that 9 total basketball games will air on the YES Network this season. The programming agreement will put the Bonnies on a regional platform that can showcase their programs to a broad audience from Olean to Long Island and the surrounding metropolitan area. 5 men's basketball games, including their Western New York rivalry game versus the University at Buffalo, will air on YES and the Gotham Sports app. 4 women's hoops games will be featured as well, including their Big Four matchup against Niagara. This is the first major move made by St. Bonaventure since the hiring of Adrian Wojnarowski as men's basketball general manager that put the Bonnies logo on the national spotlight a few weeks ago. This baseball postseason has been a nightmare for fingernails on the hands of New York Mets fans. From the Mets clinching a postseason spot with a late-game home run on the final day of the regular season, to a series-clinching home run late in Game 2 of the wildcard round, to their most recent out-of-this-world moment, a game-winning grand slam in Game 4 of the NLDS. Nail file businesses in Queens must have let out a big sigh of relief seeing Francisco Lindor round third on his bases-clearing shot in the bottom of the sixth, as the Mets went on to eliminate the Philadelphia Phillies Wednesday night. Six-seeded New York heads to the NLCS to take on the winner of Padres-Dodgers. Their opponent will be determined tonight in Game 5 in L.A. In the American League, the New York Yankees have punched their ticket to the conference series after ousting the Kansas City Royals 3-1 in the ALDS. The top-seeded Yankees got an ace of a performance from their top pitcher Garrett Cole last night as New York got the win 3-1. The Yankees will face the winner of Saturday's Game 5 between second-seeded Cleveland and sixth-seeded Detroit in the ALCS. The Canisius Golden Griffins women's soccer team is undefeated in league play and will host a Quinnipiac team Saturday that holds the same honor. The 6-0-1 Griffs welcome the 6-0 Bobcats to the Dembski Sports Complex Saturday afternoon. Canisius has not beaten Quinnipiac since 2014, going 0-8-1 in their last 9 meetings. Kickoff in downtown Buffalo is set for Saturday at noon. The Buffalo Bills coaching staff took quite the heat earlier this week following their loss to Houston in Week 5, with the crux of most fans' issues being their play calling at the end of the game. With time, we've learned that perhaps there was another reason as to why the Bills chose not to run the ball on their final drive. Running back James Cook did not practice with the team on Thursday, listing a toe injury. If Cook isn't available for the Bills in their Monday night game against the Jets, Buffalo may put the game in Josh Allen's hands more than they have all season. We've heard the mantra Bills fans have shouted since the start of the year, "Everybody eats when James cooks." Well, if Cook is not in the kitchen, so to say, Buffalo's gunslinger will need to find a way to bounce back from statistically his worst start from a week ago to pull out a divisional win on the road Monday night. This has been The Scoreboard for Friday, October 11th. I'm Jack Cruiser for WBFO Sport.
For Theater Talk on WBFO, I'm Anthony Chase.
And I'm Peter Hall.
And old title, the beautiful old Lancaster Opera House, Joseph Kesselring's Arsenic and Old Lace. Believe it or not.
Well, it's been around for years. I think many people are familiar with the movie, not so much with the play. But you got to see the play.
I got to see the play. It's very often produced, but typically not professional productions. It's only had one Broadway revival since 1941. It was done in 1986 when Polly Holiday and Jean Stapledon, remember her from All in the Family, did it. But this is a local production, the first local professional production in over 20 years. Well, for the two people out there who don't know, that is the story of the Brewster sisters, Abby and Martha, who happily, blithely, as an act of charity, poison lonely old men with glasses of homemade elderberry wine with the added ingredient of arsenic, strychnine, and cyanide. And this time out, it's Pamela Rose Mangus as Martha and Mary McMahon as Abby, Kevin Craig as Teddy, R.J. Voltz as the nephew Mortimer. Such old-style comedy.
Well, we're going to see it this weekend. I hope they make use of those two little doors on the side of the stage. That's so much fun.
Well, the set by David Dwyer is very satisfactory. It looks like an extension of the Opera House.
Well, from something old to something new. You and I both went to the free reading offered by Second Generation Theater down at the Smith Theater next door to Shays. Pure Glitter by Douglas Lyons, with the somewhat cheeky subtitle, A New Play for the Gays.
And I did feel that was true.
Well, everyone loved it.
It's about a group of friends assembling in the apartment of this couple for their 10th anniversary. You think that the central plot is going to be this character who's been invited by accident because his recent ex has been invited, and that complication is with a new boyfriend. So all kinds of opportunity for Douglas Lyons, who wrote Broadway's Chicken and Biscuits last season, to do what he does best, which is write brilliant jokes.
End of the talk back, he mentioned that. He is a student of joke writing and joke timing and takes it very seriously. And that part worked.
But you and I have oddly spent a lot of time contemplating Henrik Ibsen this week. They say if you want to get revenge on a theater producer, convince him to produce a play by Ibsen. but great writer of the modern era from 1870s into the 1890s. You saw Doll's House.
Yes, up at Niagara University. They're going to produce Lucas Nath's A Doll House Part 2 in the spring, so I thought they cleverly put on A Doll's House, the original play. Anyway, very well done. In particular, Julia Cianfrini as Nora and Lauren Farrow as her friend Christine. Really solid performances.
I also spent a week contemplating Ibsen because my own students had done Hedda Gabler last week, and then by popular demand, this has never happened, they wanted to read Ghosts this week. And he seems to speak very powerfully to my group of Gen Zers, just the whole thought of being confined by an unjust society and wanting to break out of these boundaries in favor of what's right despite any possible consequences. And entertaining Lucas Knath's Doll's House Part 2, where you contemplate what happens to Nora after she leaves her husband's household. But all of his plays end with that kind of contemplation of what will happen next. Hedda ends her life and leaves them in a shambles. What do they do next? Ghosts, a little more definitive in its conclusion, except when you realize that Ghosts was written itself as a sequel to Doll's House, a response to Doll's House. People have been so upset that this woman would leave her children that Ibsen felt challenged to write a play in which the wife decides to stay, knowing that the marriage is untenable. And it's really thrilling to hear a group of young people, teenagers, early 20s, talking about the contemporary relevance of Henrik Ibsen. Well, we're going to head out and see Shawshank Redemption at Desiderio's Dinner Theater.
Yes, a sprawling tale based on a novella by Stephen King. Many people are familiar with the movie, starring Tim Robbins as Andy Dufresne, who is falsely accused and sent up for two life sentences, who over time figures out a way to escape, and not only escape, but do it elegantly, ending up with a whole lot of money.
I just admire the fearlessness of impresario J. Desiderio, who will put the most unlikely things on that simple little stage in a dinner theater. Looking forward to this.
Well, he said that it is ambitious, especially because the movie is sprawling with so many different scenes, trying to do those quick scene changes on a small stage. He said that was probably his biggest challenge.
He has a large and adoring audience and very good food. For Theater Talk on WBFO,
I'm Peter Hall.
And I'm Anthony Chase.
Don't forget to like or subscribe so you can help others find this podcast. And if you love it, leave a review too. The WBFO Brief Podcast and the award-winning journalism of WBFO's news team are made possible by our members. Thank you for listening.